And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, all right, 20 questions time. Quiz kids time. Okay. What are the three ways of amending the United States Constitution?
Well, there's two official and one unofficial.
All right.
The way that it's always been amended is by a vote in both houses of Congress, followed by ratification by three quarters of the states. The alternative.
Two-thirds of each house of Congress and and the majority vote in three-quarters of the states.
Of the states, right.
How's that going to happen?
Well, it's why we haven't had an amendment go through in a very long time. There's only been one amendment since the early 1970s. And interestingly enough, it was they talk about the 10 amendments as the Bill of Rights, but there were actually 12 of them that were proposed, and two were never ratified sufficiently by the states.
Which were they?
Well, the one finally got ratified a number of years ago, within the last 20 years, I guess, about that Congress could not raise its pay while in the same session. In other words, they could only raise it for the next session of Congress, not the ones they're elected to.
Right.
Kind of surprising that that hadn't passed before. And I can't remember what the other one was, but it's not on the burner.
Right. Okay. So you got one way. You have the three quarters of the Congress plus, I mean, two thirds of the Congress.
Two thirds.
That's three quarters of the states. What's the other way?
The other way is a convention that three quarters of the states ask for.
So that's happened once. That happened never.
Well, it was the original way.
Yeah, it was the original way, but there were no states. There were no states. So that never happened.
Well, they were the states, but they were under the Articles of Confederation.
All right.
The Congress was only meant to amend the articles, not to tear them up and throw them out, which is what they did.
So Washington and Hamilton actually staged a coup.
Yeah. Okay. And Madison.
All right. So we have to pass over that one. But what's the real way, the third one?
Well, the real way is that politics, like nature, abhors a vacuum. So the Congress has been abrogating its own powers and failing to do a lot of what it should be doing. And as a result, cases have been going up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has, in many ways, been rewriting the Constitution. I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I ran into some friends of mine who are lawyers. One is a judge, and two of them were prosecutors, well-known. I won't mention names. And we were in a restaurant, and I said
to
them,
"The only well-known prosecutor I know is the former mayor of New York."
Well, it wasn't he. I'll tell
it wasn't
you
him.
That.
Okay.
No, I wasn't in a bar.
I didn't mention his name anyway, so it doesn't.
That's right. But I said to them, I said, "Fellas, is it just me, or are we now operating under a constitution that's different than the one that we learned about in law school?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they had to agree with it. I mean, there's some really radical differences. You know, for years the Republicans had convinced people that any liberal ruling was a result of quote unquote activist judges,
mm-hmm.
and that the judges should not be going beyond, very strict interpretations and the four corners of the case that was before them. And this court, the Roberts Court, is probably the most activist court that we've seen in over a half century, if not longer.
Well, the, 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 power, nice, The nice thing about the Roberts Court is that they don't tell you why they do what they do. They just do it. And therefore, there's no guidance given. I mean, supposing you wanted to follow it, you think it's right, but you have no way of knowing how to follow it because they don't tell you the reasoning.
Well, that's those cases on the shadow docket.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you do have cases where they do mention it, like the case where they took out Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. You know, the Chief Justice says there's no reason for it anymore. You know, there's no discrimination.
Right. If you change history or you change current events, then you've got a good reason.
Or if you change facts.
When they do give a reason, they've usually based it on facts that don't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a good example in the Texas redistricting case where the district judge found, as a matter of fact, that it was that the gerrymander was based on race.
Right.
Primarily.
Right.
And the circuit court agreed with it. Right. I think it went up to circuit court. And the Supreme Court takes the case and essentially ignores the findings of the district court. Now, when you the rule of law is that the finders of fact, whether it be a jury or a judge sitting without a jury, those are, you have to decide the law as to those facts, except in certain instances where they have what they call de novo jurisdiction, where they can just re-examine all the facts. But this wasn't one of those cases. They just basically said, no, his determination didn't matter. This was all purely political. And we've determined that political motivation is a valid reason for depriving people of voting for certain elective offices.
So let's get this straight. They can ignore the facts if they want to, although they're not supposed to. They're not supposed to. The finding of fact is something that's handled on the lower court. They have to deal with the law. The facts are whatever the lower courts say they are. They've determined what the facts are. But this court says we're not going to do it that way. We'll decide what the facts are, even though that's not what the rule says, right?
I mean, they've done this before. There was a question on Final Jeopardy a couple weeks ago about the case where they determined that because it had to do with importing and whatever, the tomatoes were vegetables and not fruits, whereas the fact is, botanically, tomatoes are fruits.
Right.
But they found differently to come to a different result.
Right, exactly.
So it's an old trick that they use. So it's not unusual. But it was unusual because for years they got away from this. Now they're back to this and justifying, ends justifying the means. So that's where we're at.
And they tell you they believe that precedent no longer matters.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, precedent should be overthrown. That's what Alito says. That's what Clarence Thomas says. So,
well, even though they, the last several have said that stare decisis, which is a word for precedent, should govern, they've ignored that.
They only say that when they're up for nomination. As soon as they get nominated, they forget that.
Right.
Okay. So the real way in which the Constitution is amended is by judicial fiat, at least in the last 20 years under Roberts.
They created an immunity that isn't there.
Yeah. They created a Second Amendment that had never been there. Right.
Right. They took out the first part of the Second Amendment.
Right.
Which says a well-regulated militia.
Exactly. They decide that they decide what the facts are, not the lower courts.
Right.
They create the unitary executive, which is nowhere mentioned in the Constitution, and it's a concept that's contrary to the whole structure of the Constitution's structure.
They said that the president can fire people from independent commissions, even though there's a law that says they can only do so for cause.
Right. So... In this situation, when we celebrate Bill of Rights Day, what are we celebrating?
The death of Bill of Rights Day. Somewhere along the line.
Or maybe what we should be celebrating is a rededication to the spirit of the Bill of Rights.
Right. Well, they've also changed the First Amendment with regard to religion.
Right.
That they've reinserted religion into government in many cases.
Then they claim that that's what the disestablishment of religion means, the establishment of religion.
Yeah.
Right. The same way with anti-discrimination. They've figured out a way in which the powerless minority discriminates against the powerful majority.
Right.
And that's illegal.
Right. But that's the only illegality that they'll remedy.
Right. Exactly. So in a situation like that, there is no constitution such as we were raised and are probably still being raised to think that there is. I mean, I'm sure that kids today are being taught you have the right to assemble, or you have the right to free speech, or whatever, without reference to the actual way that right has been abrogated and is being. You have the right to free speech, but the libraries have to be purged of books.
Yes. Yeah. You know, there's an old saying that the Supreme Court is final, not because it's infallible, but it's infallible because it's final.
Exactly.
And we're stuck with this for a while.
Which means the
demise of the Constitution, in my opinion, goes back to the 2020 election, when on straight party vote, the Supreme Court prevented a full recount in Florida. Mm-hmm. And they did so in a manner that they said you can never cite this case again as precedent, which is ridiculous, because what's the purpose of having a ruling if you can't cite it?
Right.
And then as a result of that, George Bush got to, in his second term, he wouldn't have had a second term if he hadn't been elected to a first, or in some cases appointed to a first, as people say. He got in Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito.
Right.
And that essentially has set the pace for for what's happened over the last 20 years, 25 years now. And as I said, and I think I sent you an article that was in the Atlantic this week, destroying the or diminishing the right of minorities to vote has been a life's work for Chief Justice Roberts ever since he was in the Reagan Justice Department. So,
the reason I'm talking about the Bill of Rights is because liberals, ever since the days of the Warren Court, felt that the structure of the court system, the laws of the court system, could be relied upon, and that politics was not so significant, because in the final analysis, there was the Constitution, there was the Supreme Court, and justice would be redeemed, freedom would be redeemed, civil rights would be redeemed by the Supreme Court. But we know that that's not true.
Well, traditionally, the Supreme Court has been very conservative.
Yeah.
My mentor, the late Bob Munley, says they always seem to get it wrong. And I said, well, was Brown versus Board of Education wrong? He said, no, but they were just trying to undo Plessy.
Yeah.
Which they had gotten wrong.
Right.
So,
But if politics is the only thing left, then we have to be good at politics. There's nothing wrong with that. There's not a dirty word. There's nothing wrong with being good at politics or fighting politically. The court is a political instrument. The Congress is a political instrument. The presidency is a political instrument. All legislatures are political instruments. The structure of the government exists to maintain the society's relations, property relations, all the relations that make up the society. And that's political. That's a struggle of power. Nothing wrong with that. But if you have a party like you have with the Democrats now, today, that doesn't see it that way, that thinks somehow we're all going to get along, we're going to work out the consensus, when you have the other side saying, what consensus? We're not interested in getting along. Then you've abandoned politics. You've disarmed half the team.
Yep. The Republicans are just interested in power.
That's not right.
The rule of law.
That's right. Excuse me. I got nothing against being interested in power. But what you have to have is either you have a system in which you can negotiate some kind of a consensus that gives people whatever they get based on their powerful strength or powerful or weakness, their lack of power, or you have actual fighting. Peacefully, you negotiate. Not peacefully.
Or you have guardrails on that power.
Well, guardrails don't work. Guardrails don't work.
Well, as we found out, they can work, but they haven't worked because the Supreme Court has basically destroyed those guardrails.
Exactly. And as long as you have a group of people that say, it's us, we have the only right to power, then there can't be guardrails. Guardrails only work if you have people who say, okay, we are willing to negotiate a modus vivendi, a way of living together with the other side. We can work that out. But if you don't have people who say that, then you have two possibilities. One is political, and the other is you fight it out with guns. There's no other way.
Yeah.
Well, we don't fight it out with guns. We don't have a system for that.
Yeah, that's the courtroom is our showdown at OK Corral.
Yeah, but there are places where they fight it out with guns. South Sudan, they fight it out with guns. Lebanon, they fight it out with guns. They fight, but that's not the whole point of representative government, is to avoid that.
Yeah, you know, before we kind of leave that, there are several things that happened this week that, again, you know, relate back to the courts or the Bill of Rights. You know, we had Tish James. They've been trying to indict her, and the grand juries, because that's a process, that's due process, which is in the Constitution. It's in the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get a grand jury to indict her. They've now failed for the second time on that. That happened this week.
And this despite the fact that grand juries indict anybody at any time, right?
Yeah. I mean, the number, I think I saw over 100,000 cases over the last number of years, and only like basically a handful have they failed to indict. It just is unheard of. We had in Indiana the legislature, the state senate, after the House bent to the will of the President Trump, the Senate voted not to gerrymander. And it's kind of incredible, because in Indiana, there's 50 state senators, and 40 of them, a supermajority, well over a supermajority, are Republican. And in this matter, 21 of them, over half, voted no. That's
Mike Pence's state, right?
Yeah, and Mike Pence, I understand, was there trying to, you know, encourage a no vote on things. He's become more of a constitutionalist ever since the Hang Mike Pence crowd was out there. But give him props when they're there. That's, you know, so in effect, the Supreme Court can't rule on the political gerrymandering in Indiana, because there is none.
Right.
It didn't go through.
Right.
We did have that argument in the Supreme Court, though, about the powers of the president to fire certain members of commissions. and agencies, particularly independent agencies. And there was a law that said he can't do it except for cause. And in this argument, you know, it is apparent that the conservative majority is going to give him that power. They're going to cast that law, that restriction on him aside. Although there may be, I'm going to be interesting to see what Amy Coney Barrett does, because the majority was struggling with the fact that it could go too far and they could wind up giving the president powers to undo things that Republicans wanted. So we'll have to see how it's written, but it's going to be written in a manner that emasculates the role of the first branch of government, the Congress. So, you know, we're not even talking about the Bill of Rights. We're talking about the body of the Constitution and that.
Right.
We also have a question, you know, about the president's war powers,
right,
or Congress's war powers,
right,
over Venezuela.
Right.
You know, it's pretty obvious that they're committing acts of war. We talked about this last week, that there may have been war crimes committed without a declaration of war.
Right.
And then this week they had
piracy.
They boarded and captured ships.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand.
Which is an act of war.
That's an act of war. I mean, isn't there a famous episode in the beginning of the 19th century where off the Barbary Coast with pirates? Yes. I mean, it was.
Yes.
he's reprising it, Trump.
Yeah. That was America's first foreign war.
Yeah.
After, you know, Thomas Jefferson. Yeah.
Well, this is not just Trump. Yeah. This is Trump and Rubio.
Yeah. Right. Right. Oh, let me jump back a little bit to domestic. This week, Donald Trump issued an executive pardon to Kim Davis, who was convicted in Colorado of tampering with the election process through the machines. You know, giving up the machines.
And she boasted about it. She was proud of it.
Yeah, their programs or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, it's been pretty settled law that the president doesn't have the power to pardon someone convicted of state laws. That only belongs to the governors.
Right.
I'm just wondering if that gets up to the Supreme Court, whether that's going to go out of style as well.
But that implicates the 10th Amendment, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the power is not given to the federal government, are reserved to the states.
Right, which was the bedrock of reactionary and conservative thinking throughout the 20th century. Defend states' rights.
Yes.
In fact, the Civil War.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the states, I always used to ask, what state rights did South Carolina want that Massachusetts didn't have that wasn't related to slavery?
And?
You never get an answer to that. Because that's basically all they wanted, was something related to slavery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Bill of Rights Day implicates a lot. It's I mean, if you really reflect on it, it should get your blood boiling, and you should get active in politics, because you can't rely on the government, you can't rely on the courts, you can only rely on people organized who are prepared to fight for their rights, do what it takes.
Well, on Saturday we attended a rally that was supposed to do those things.
We did. It was very interesting. It was sponsored by, 10 different organizations in the Scranton area?
Yeah. Well, some of them are beyond the Scranton area, but Scranton branches of them, and then a couple of local unions.
Yeah. But these were all civil society type organizations concerned with the rule of law, with fair districting, good legislation, immigrant rights, civil rights, right? All that kind of stuff. And labor rights, right? That's who sponsored this. And they, I don't know how they did this, but they corralled four of the most important Democratic congresspeople, Jim McGovern, Brendan Boyle, Jim McGovern from Massachusetts, Brendan Boyle, who, what, he controls the Philadelphia Democratic Party. And
yeah, well, he's on the budget committee.
He's the ranking member. Yeah.
Ranking member, which means if the Democrats get control of Congress, he's going to be the head of that committee.
Correct. And then there was another congresswoman from Pennsylvania.
Madeline Dean.
Also an important member of various committees.
Yes. And then Pramila Jayapal.
Yes,
from Washington State.
Who is head of the Progressive Caucus.
Yeah.
And a very important congressperson. Very. So there they all are.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised she was there, given the state of emergency that's throughout the state of Washington. But her district may not be affected, and she's got a whole bunch. She's got Amazon's home office, right?
That's correct. That's correct. And she made the point that I forget what percentage, but there's some huge percentage of people who work for Amazon whose wage is supplemented by SNAP, by food stamps, because the Amazon pay is so low that you work a full-time shift in Amazon and you qualify for food stamps, and you need the food stamps or you're not going to eat. So in other words, Jeff Bezos's trillions are produced by the American taxpayer who support his workers.
It's a subsidy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a substitute for a fair and living wage.
Exactly. So there they were, and they spoke mainly about healthcare and the irresponsible and shocking and inhuman Republican approach to healthcare, in which they pointed out what the ending of the subsidies for participating in the ACA marketplace, the Obamacare marketplace, what that will mean in Lackawanna County and how many people would be affected. And it was truly shocking, truly shocking. And I know that the cutoff of the SNAP benefits in my county affects 14% of the county. 40% of the kids in the public schools in my county eat breakfast and lunch in school for free because they're too poor and they are, you know, and they've qualified for that. That's all gone.
Most of the people who are affected by this are represented by Republicans.
That's right.
In red states.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had what, several hundred people, maybe 200, 220 people who were at this rally. The speaker spoke very well, but unfortunately, there was no call to action. At the end of it, what could we do? They didn't say we could do anything. That was disappointing.
Yeah, the only thing they pointed at, because they had a couple of poster signs there, was vote out
Bresnahan.
But Paige Cognetti, his opponent, wasn't there.
She wasn't there. Well, with that kind of opposition, you can't win. And really, it's embarrassing to have such prominent people who in Congress do so, you know, a pretty good job, and yet they come before you, they speak well, they mean well, obviously. They came here from across the country, but there was no leadership. They didn't say, come join us to do something, which everybody there would have done.
Right.
Very disappointing.
Well, we'll have to see. This week, Hanukkah starts.
Okay. Happy latkes. Happy latkes.
Latkes and jelly donuts and
right.
What have you. And we'll see what gifts over the next 8 days we are given.
Let's hope we're not in a shooting war in South America.
Yeah.
That would really be dreadful.
Yep.
All right. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.